So, dude, you know Leander's not joining us today.
Of course, yeah.
Did you hear what happened? Did you hear what really happened?
No, what happened?
He injured himself.
What?
Yeah. He was ribboning, and he like pulled his groin muscle. You know what ribboning is?
No, I don't.
You know in the Olympics where they have that long ribbon on a stick?
And people dance around and, okay.
Yeah, I guess he's super into that, and he actually has done competitions and stuff, and he was practicing in his yard, and his foot slipped, and he pulled his groin. Hello and welcome to Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name's Airfun Elijah. I'm here as usual with Buster Hine. Hey, Buster.
Hey, man.
And actually, Leander had something personal come up, nothing life-threatening, but he couldn't be with us this week. So we are joined by our pal, Chris Forsman from Ars Technica. Hey, Chris. Chris. Chris.
Hello.
Chris. Welcome back.
I'm here.
Could you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Could you hear me that whole time?
Yeah.
You could?
The whole time. Yeah.
That must have been annoying for you. Chris is on a train traveling through the deep forests of Chicago on his way to where?
Indiana.
You're on your way to Indiana. So we may experience some audio issues, and if we do, I will masterfully edit them so they disrupt us in the least annoying fashion. Welcome to the Sounds show, good. Chris.
Yeah, thanks
for joining
me.
Us on such short notice.
Well, I'm just glad that with the magic of 3G networking and an iPhone and Skype, I can be on a podcast while I'm riding on an Amtrak train.
It's actually pretty incredible, isn't it? I mean, the fact that you're riding on a train, you know, like 2,000 miles away.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We live in incredible times.
We do. Hey, Christopher, for those who have never read your amazing work, tell us a little bit about what you do for Ars Technica.
Well, I make Ars Technica awesome.
I would agree. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But I've been writing for Ars for the last 4 years, mainly covering Apple.
Okay.
So that's sort of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But I get to occasionally write on topics like just tech policy and... you know, things like intellectual property, or sometimes I get to write about CPUs, a little bit of this and that.
And you cover photography from time to time too, right? I think I've seen some of your pieces about that.
Yeah, I've been a photographer since I was pretty much right out of high school. So yeah, whenever I get a chance to write about some cool camera tech, I always try to work that in.
A man after my own heart. Well, we won't be talking about any photography today, but we do have lots of Apple stories to churn through. What do you guys say we just jump right into it? I want to start off the show with a couple of fun stories, little short ones. The first one is CNBC recently did a survey, and their results were 51% of all American homes now own at least one Apple product. The national average is about 1.6 devices per household. That in itself, I think, is pretty amazing. I mean, you think back, you know, 20 years, and I mean, I would imagine maybe 1 in 5 houses had Apple devices in them. Would you guys agree?
1 in 10.
You think it's more like 1 in 10? And a majority of the houses.
20 years ago, sure.
Yeah, 20 years ago, that's actually probably really true. A lot of the houses actually had more than one Apple device. Buster, how many Apple devices do you have in your household?
I don't know. Probably 8, something like that.
8. Well, you're obviously lying.
No.
We don't pay you enough to have that many devices. Chris, how many do you think you have in your house?
I could figure it out real quick. There's 3 iPhones.
Wow, 3 iPhones.
3 iPads.
Yep.
2 laptops.
Wow.
And an iPod Touch. So that's 9.
Oh, my gosh. So let's see. I got my... MacBook Pro. There's a MacBook in the house. I have an iPad 2. I just sold, or an iPad 3. I just sold my iPad 2, so we're at 3. And then 2 iPhones. So I have 5 Apple devices in one household. Mm-hmm. And I really want the new Apple TV. So that makes 6 Apple devices in one household. It's really incredible how I feel like they add up, don't you think? Like you'll start off with 1, and mm-hmm. then... it's actually, I take that back. I have seven. I have, I have eight. I have an Airport Express router, and then I have an Airport Extreme router.
Yeah, I've got one of each of those.
Wow, that's pretty incredible.
I guess that puts me at 11.
Wow, you win. Hey, it's not a contest, dude. Whatever. why do you guys think it is that it's so easy to acquire Apple devices in one household? I mean, you know, like you get one, like let's say you start off with an iPhone. What makes it so that you end up with 11? Chris?
Well, I think,
Buster, you can go. Buster, you go.
Okay. All right. Well, I just think it's the whole, you know, you have a great ecosystem and everything. So you have a good experience with one device.
Yeah, sure.
And then you want to, you know, taste more of the Kool-Aid. And then, you know, you go further in.
I love the Kool-Aid. Chris, what do you think? Chris.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, it's kind of a really fun mix of garbled text and train.
Yeah, I was just going to say the Kool-Aid tastes kind of like a mix of raspberry.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, hey, we're obviously not the only ones buying multiple Apple devices. As you guys know, Apple stock is at an insanely all-time high. Let's see, they closed today at $609.86. It was at $614, I think, yesterday. And Apple execs cashed in $314 million in stock in the last few days. And the leader of the cash-in, as you probably would guess, Tim Cook, sold 200,000 shares for a total value of $119,715,000. It keeps going here, but smaller shares. Philip Schiller sold 64,000 shares about. He made about $38 million. Peter Oppenheimer, the CFO, 150,000 shares, $89 million. Robert Mansfeld, senior VP, 56,000 shares, $33 million. And we're back. Sorry about that, guys. We were trying to keep Chris on the call, but unfortunately, his 3G gave up the ghost. We couldn't get him back. So we're going to have him on again in the future. Chris, if you're listening, thanks for being on. But in all honesty, you know, I just didn't really like how good his Apple opinions were.
I just didn't like that he had more Apple devices than me.
He had a lot of Apple devices.
That
really hurt me.
I don't care how cool he was.
In a strange way, yeah. Nice guy, but we had to let him go. Well, I guess it'll just be you and me then, buddy. Let's just pick it up right where we left off.
All right, cool.
Just a little fun fact, you know, the CEO selling their stock, but that is an insane amount of money. I mean, I can't think of any executives out there making that much money, you know, selling anything, any annual salary, anything. It's just like, that's just an insane amount of money. Apple's making so much money now. And their stock is doing so well. Their executives are not just, you know, making good paychecks. They're filthy rich.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they're making, you know, Goldman Sachs type money, you know?
Yeah, they are. In fact, they're making more than Goldman Sachs. How do you feel about that?
I don't think they are.
I think they are, man.
Oh, okay. Like their top executive. Oh, well,
yeah.
Saying, like,
I mean, $119 million. Yeah. I cannot think of a single person working at any company who has ever made that much money. Of course, I'm sure there are examples out there. I'm not so
well-versed
in finance, yeah. But like that's like I'm a professional football player salary.
No, that's like 1 year you make like $20 million in the NFL if you're the best.
The best, that's, right? The
yeah, the very best. This is $114 million in 1 year. That's Jeez. A lot, you know.
That's insane. Well, hey, I don't want to beat a dead horse. Let's move forward, shall we? But I do want to talk more about Tim Cook. So Tim Cook has been in office, so to speak. I don't know, what, 230 days now, something like that. Ever since he took over for Steve Jobs. And he has done a lot of things differently at Apple. A lot of things differently. And I just want to review a few things. So first and foremost, there's a lot more transparency about Apple's overseas operations. And by the way, I'm reading this from an article on The Loop. I thought that these were some really interesting facts. So all these things are happening overseas with manufacturing, and Tim Cook, I mean, he goes there, right? He's there now, and he is touring these factories and seeing what working conditions are really like. Well, as much as he can for being an Apple executive, right? I'm sure they fancy up the place. He's at Foxconn right now. Do you think this is something that Steve Jobs would have done, Buster?
Visit Foxconn? No.
Yeah, I mean, so Tim Cook has obviously expressed great interest in transparency in China, working conditions, and I can't imagine Steve Jobs would have ever gotten on a plane and had, you know, and taken time to go over to the Foxconn factory and see what working conditions are like. Tim Cook's posing for pictures with people.
Actually, well, you know what? I kind of take that back. I bet Steve Jobs had been there to the Foxconn facilities.
You think so?
Yeah, at some point, definitely.
In such a public way, though. I mean, don't you think Steve Jobs would have done
it? Well, not in such a public way. That's the thing. Steve obviously never did it in a public way like Tim Cook is.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Cook, I mean, is taking photos with people. You know, right. Like people are really excited to see him. Well, corporate philanthropy, excuse me, Apple has taken on a much bigger, you know, role in corporate philanthropy. They're matching employee donations. They have implemented a dividend and stock buyback program. And they're also still releasing all these amazing products. So I think one of the reasons I found this interesting is because, you know, Steve Jobs has a really big shadow, you know, and if you were an executive, you know, you would have to try to fill his shoes in some way, which seems like an impossible task. I mean, right. Steve Jobs was just voted the best CEO ever by Forbes magazine.
Best entrepreneur ever. Yeah.
Best entrepreneur ever, which I mean,
well, actually it wasn't the best entrepreneur ever. It was like of our generation. So, you know, okay. The last 30 years.
So for me, that would be highly intimidating, right? You're going into this company trying to take it over. But I feel, and you tell me if you disagree with me, I feel like Tim Cook has really been making his own mark on Apple. Would you say?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the way you have to go about it, because there's no way that you can, you know, replicate exactly what Steve Jobs did and be Steve Jobs. You have to, you know, lead Apple in your own way. And I think that's great that he's not trying to be exactly like Steve, because that's, you're never going to be able to, you know.
No, I totally agree with you there. No one is ever going to be like Steve Jobs. There's just no way. And I applaud Tim Cook, and you can color me impressed. Color me impressed that he is doing his own thing, for better or for worse. I mean, a lot of this stuff looks great on paper, like him, you know, taking a personal interest in the working conditions of Chinese laborers. I mean, he's really kind of doing his own thing and putting his own fingerprints on Apple. And if you would have asked me when he had started if he was going to be able to do that, I would have told you no way. I mean, this guy, he's going to work for this company, and he's going to do his the best job that he can, but he's always going to be in Steve Jobs' shadow. And that certainly doesn't seem to be the case. But let me ask you this. Now that Steve Jobs is gone, I mean, he was widely known as the dictator at Apple, right? It's like all the major decisions had to go through him.
Right.
And I think that was for the better, because he had impeccable taste. And, you know, he didn't let people slide often. You know, if something wasn't good, like a product wasn't good, he wouldn't release it.
Yeah.
And he had this amazing control. And I think that really helped Apple define themselves as a company by only releasing, you know, relevant products that were highly, highly polished.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Apple TV for a moment. The Apple TV comes out and it has this new UI that a lot of people are saying they don't like. And I think this is actually your article in Cult to Mac, Buster. You were writing about how that UI for the Apple TV was actually shelved because Steve Jobs didn't like it.
Right. Well, there was, you know, a guy on Twitter who said that he had worked on the Apple TV, and he was saying that, oh, this new UI, that's something that I was a part of creating 5 years ago, but Steve Jobs didn't like it. And, you know, kind of the initial impression that guy gave was, you know, there's nobody at Apple to say no to bad design. And then he kind of, that was his first tweets about it. And then, you know, that story started getting attention, and then he kind of backtracked on that a bit. And was like, oh, I didn't mean it as, you know, Apple is failing. You know, 5 years ago, Apple didn't have iOS. It wasn't popular. There weren't apps. People weren't used to that type of interface. So that might have been one of the reasons why Steve Jobs didn't like the UI of the first, you know, that was proposed that we see today.
Right.
So you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that.
But I guess the part about that article that you wrote that struck me the most was the fact that this UI was shelved, right? And Steve Jobs passes away, and it was shelved because of him. And then 5 years later, now he's gone, and they resurrect it. They bring it back. And right. For me, I'm like, wow, that's crazy, right? Because Steve Jobs never would have allowed this. Now that he's gone, they're making these decisions, and they're things that Steve Jobs wouldn't want to do. And you could say that probably about Tim Cook's visit to China. Like, Steve Jobs may not have wanted to do that in such a public way. It's a little scary to me, to be honest. I know it's a silly thing to be like a little put off by, but I'm like, you know, like, Steve was in such control of that company. And I know their products for the next 2 years are probably totally laid out, right? I mean, Steve Jobs had his hands in everything before he passed away, and the company's direction is set. And you could even argue that a lot of their current successes are because of things that Steve Jobs, you know, had worked on before he passed away. But eventually, those decisions, that bank of decisions made by Steve, are going to run dry. Do you think that we're going to start seeing Apple really kind of start heading in some weird directions and start being a totally different company than before, you know, Steve, after a post-Steve company where it's run much differently?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, with the Apple TV UI, that was proposed 5 years ago. And Steve Jobs, he always changed his mind on a lot of things. He would, you know, see an idea that would be presented to him, and he would reject it and say it's total crap. And then he would just flip around, you know, later and be like, oh, this is the greatest idea ever. And he would like claim ownership of it, like it came from him, you know, which was all that was like the weird thing about Steve Jobs is it wasn't just that he was great at, you know, finding good ideas. It was like he claimed ownership of everything, which, you know, kind of discounts the abilities of everybody at Apple. You know, you have a lot of people who have made Apple what it was. It wasn't just Steve. So, I mean, I have faith in their ability to, you know, stay on their current course and not turn out just crazy weird products, you know?
You know, you make a good point about him just kind of like putting his name on products that are successful. And a friend of mine and I were talking about this same topic, and he said that Steve was really good at showing up for the picture, right? It's like, for example, he didn't like the name of the iPad. He didn't like the name of the iMac when they first came out. A new report came out. He didn't like the name Siri. He wanted to do something different. But he couldn't think of any names that were better, so ultimately he conceded, and they ended up using all these different names, which he grew to like, which surprised me. I would have thought that Steve would have said no, and that would have been the end of it. But then once the products became popular, he's all over it, right? He's shown up for that picture.
Right.
He's like, we're really proud of this. We think you're going to love this. We've been working on this for a long time. And he was really good at that, right? I mean, I don't know how much credit he took for other people's work.
Well, I think that's been with John Ive. I think John Ive has expressed that a couple times that, you know, he used to get hurt that Steve would do that, you know, not give,
really,
you know, credit to like John Ive and other people. And it would just be like the Steve show. And you'd have these other guys at Apple who are like, well, wait just a second here. I came up with that, and you said it was crap at first, and I pushed this so hard on you and fought for it, and I got this, you know, to be a reality, and now you're taking credit for it. That's bull crap.
Right. Man, if that had happened to me, like, I don't know how I would be able to deal with that in the workplace. Like, if your boss, you know, just decides to take credit for all this work that you've been doing, that's like straight out of like a bad cop show, right?
No,
it's like your boss is like telling you not to investigate something. You're going against the grain and you're figuring out all the facts, and then you catch the killer, and he does the press conference.
And he's just like, yeah,
he's like, I knew it the whole time.
Yeah, no, in it's fact, totally.
If you
like that.
You watch Dexter, there.
Yeah, no,
show,
yeah.
Showtime, that was the plot of one of their seasons. Yeah, it's so funny. Well, you know, Steve Jobs, we love you wherever you are. Even though you took credit for other people's ideas, you know, Tim Cook seems to be a much softer man. At least externally, you know, like, I don't know if Steve Jobs maybe was like that once you got to know him, but I really appreciate the fact that Tim Cook really seems to be caring, you know, like the fact that he is a 100 millionaire, right?
Right.
And he's getting on a plane to go to China and meet workers and take pictures with them. It's like, that really says a lot. And I really am happy that, at least in that regard, he is he's saying, hey, look, this matters to us. We don't want to profit off the despair of others. And I can't think of another CEO that's done this, right? I mean, Foxconn makes products for all sorts of companies, not just Apple.
Yeah, he's done, you know, they've done a great job basically allowing the spotlight to be on them with the Foxconn thing, you know.
Right.
They haven't handled it perfectly, but definitely like you said, not. Foxconn makes products for a lot of companies.
Tons. And
they're not the only company that's guilty. Apple isn't, you know.
Absolutely not. And one last note about Tim Cook in China. So, you know, Tim Cook ordered that independent review of the Foxconn factory by the Fair Labor Association. And that report recently came back. And there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is, well, let's start with the bad news actually first, since that will make more sense. The Fair Labor Association found wide-scale violations of Chinese labor laws, including the amount of overtime work, the compensation received for overtime, and numerous health and safety risks, as well as crucial communication gaps that led to widespread sense of unsafe working conditions. I'm reading verbatim from our Cult of Mac article, Violations of Foxconn Factory Workers' Rights, by John Brownlee. The good news is, though, and I really think this is where the bright spot is that both Apple and Foxconn claim to be fully on board to fix the issues. And that was the whole point of the audit, right? It's like, Tim Cook ordered this audit. They found problems, which, by the way, how many companies would go in and do an audit like this and then say, look, we actually found a ton of problems. Whoops.
Right.
You know, like, here it is. Here's our dirty laundry. There are a lot of problems at this factory.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, like, they're being transparent about it, and they're saying, we're going to really work and fix these things. Do you think it's just lip service, Buster? Do you think that things at this factory are really going to get fixed?
I think they will. They have definitely higher odds of having them fixed. Apple's definitely been more transparent than anybody else. We had a story a couple weeks ago that was from BuzzFeed, where they asked a bunch of different companies, like, what they're doing to make their factory conditions better, and nobody would comment on the story, but Apple's the only one who's willing to, you know, stick their neck out a bit and say, yeah, things aren't perfect and we're working on it.
Yeah, I agree, man. I applaud them for that too. I want to move on from China, although I love China.
Dude, I love China, man.
And actually, I'd love to go to China someday. Will you come with me when I go?
Can we get in like one of those boats, like those China boats where they got the guy with the hat and he's pushing you?
I would
kind of like
to
a gondola.
That. Oh, yeah. It's like the Asian gondola.
Yeah. Like that.
I would
that.
Love to do that. I'd love to do the Italian gondola.
Oh, okay. That would be way more romantic.
We can do that at CES next year. But let's talk about this story. So there was a recent survey done by Park and Associates, and it basically said that 87% of iPhone 4S owners are still using Siri at least once a month. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But it got me to thinking, once a month?
That's not that often.
It's not that often.
That's not often, you know?
It really isn't often at all. And do you have an iPhone 4S?
Yeah.
So do I. And how often do you use Siri?
I use Siri like maybe once a week to, you know, set an alarm when I'm just like too tired. I'm like about to pass out and I'm like, Siri, wake me up in an hour, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I use it for too. If I need to set an alarm, I use Siri.
That's pretty much it. I only use Siri to set an alarm. And she is awesome at it.
She's really good at setting alarms. Yeah, she really is. But I guess in my mind, I'm kind of like, is Siri a flop? Like, Apple is pushing this technology and they're kind of touting it as the iPhone 4S's best feature.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know anyone that really uses it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work a lot. Granted, caveat, it is still in beta. But
right.
Is it this thing that's really going to catch on? Are we really going to be using Siri to browse our Apple TVs and talk to our iPads and, you know, create reports in Word and all this stuff that everyone's touting that we're going to do? Is that just hype? Or do you think that Siri's genuinely going to evolve into something useful?
I hope that it's going to evolve into something useful. But like you said, it just kind of does suck. You know, I mean, it is beta. But
it is beta. But it's the best of a lot of different technologies that try to do the same thing.
Right.
But, you know, like, it really isn't that great. And I guess maybe for lack of vision, I don't see its utility in the future.
Well,
like, when people
are
telling me I'm going to search my Apple TV using Siri, I'm like, man, isn't it just faster to use a remote?
Right.
Is that me just being old?
No,
and inflexible.
Alex Heath, he made a good point today. He was like, I still feel awkward, you know, sitting in like Starbucks with my iPad trying to use Siri to like dictate stuff on my iPad, you know, use voice dictation.
Yeah. Like, oh, man, just, that's a great
point. It's completely awkward. You know?
You're never going to be using it in public places because you are going to look like a total tool.
Especially if you know, trying to send like an intimate email to somebody, you know, telling them how much you love them and stuff. That's not going to happen. Say goodbye to that.
Yeah, that's true. And let's face it, some of the totally obscene things that we're willing to say, we're only willing to type.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like all those text messages you received.
Yeah, exactly. And the ones you send me, I'm sure you would never say out loud in front of anyone.
Only in front of, you know, very special people.
Well, hey, let's wrap up with this. I was reading this rumor on Cult-O-Mac. I'll ask you what you think of it. Apple working on totally new 5-inch Retina device for 2013 debut. Yay or nay?
Total bullshit.
You know, honestly, I hope this is true. I would love to see a 5-inch Retina display iPhone.
No
but
way.
Boy, I just
go get
that,
a
it reminds
Note.
Me of the Samsung Note, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't that thing have a five inch screen?
Yeah. In a stylus.
And, you know, yeah, and a stylus. And I remember when we saw that banner at CES this year, and we could not stop laughing. And I also want to point out that I'm the one that coined the term the flablet. Because it's not quite a phone, and it's not quite a tablet. It's the flablet. And it doesn't fit in your pocket, but it might fit in your purse or your merce if you're a man.
And the thing is Samsung, they've just totally embraced that idea. It's not a phone. It's not a tablet.
Yeah.
It's the best of both worlds.
It's the best of both worlds. Or it's the worst of both.
Exactly.
Depending on how you're looking at it.
Yeah.
And I'm all for a big screen. I love big screens. I love me some big screens. Let me tell you.
You just need more pixels.
But I the more pixels, the better, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, like a 5-inch iPhone, I mean, gosh, we haven't even gotten a 4-inch iPhone.
Right. That's, you know, who made that rumor? It had to have been Digitimes. You know they come out with stuff like
that
all the
time. Well, Digitimes comes out with all sorts of crazy stuff, don't they?
Right.
But, yeah, you know, so if you're hearing rumors about a 5-inch iPhone, it looks like it came from Mako Takara. They've got a spotty record. So take this one with a grain of salt, people.
Yeah, be careful when you're reading Apple rumors, especially ones like that.
Yeah, be careful out there. And hey, you know, at Cult-O-Mac, we report the rumors, we report the news, and we tell you how credible we think they are. And sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong. We don't have a crystal ball. Well, I do. But it's actually not right that often, believe it or not.
That's too bad.
I wish it were. You know how rich I'd be? Tim Cook rich.
Tim Cook rich.
I just coined that term too.
Yeah, you got to start using that. Oh, dude.
Dang.
That guy's so rich. He's Tim Cook rich.
He's Tim Cooked. See those 20-inch rims? Tim Cooked. Damn. All right. Now we're just making this show terrible. Let's wrap up here.
No, we need a guy with a British accent.
We really could use a guy with a British accent, but apparently he injured his groin and couldn't make it today. But hey, thanks for listening, guys. We had a kind of rocky episode with the audio issues we were having. Thanks for sticking with us. The Cultcast is the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm Erfon Elijah. You can find me on Twitter at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. And if you want some seriously great banter, I would follow Buster on Twitter. Buster, you're BST3R, right?
Right. Nailed it.
And we'll have Chris Forsman back again sometime because
he really has
a lot of great things to say.
Yeah, that he's guy, awesome.
Yeah, he's great. So thank you, Chris, from Ars Technica for trying to stick it out with us. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. We will see you guys again next time. Wah, 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 wah.